Has our consumer society taught us to destroy the earth? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on glimpses of our God, and our topic for today is creation care. Conversation partners are again two members of the Walmart University School of Theology, Stravko Stefanovich, Old Testament, Paul Dibdahl, New Testament, and Mission. Now, before I let you men destroy my line of thinking here, let me just give a bit of a setting here, because our one of our daughters and her husband gave us a little book entitled In Sheep We Trust. Lauren Weber is the author, and it talks about how we have moved from a saving culture to one in which we simply spend and use, so that you have to constantly replace things. Now we're moving into probably at the time we're doing this recording, it looks like another perhaps economic downturn. Should we seek the cure by just spending and buying more? Or should we perhaps try to learn how to save again and ask the question, does the Bible help us in any of this way? I think of one little jingle that we found in that book that came out of World War II, where of necessity we had to save. Just couldn't have everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it was use it up, wear it out, make it do, or do without. Now, if we look at American culture, there are probably three mainstreams, and their interest in preserving the creation will vary significantly. There is the secular mainstream. Now, at its best, it can be very altruistic, but at its worst, it can be driven by greed and arrogance. Now, the so-called mainstream Protestantism that is less concerned about a personal God is very much inclined towards social activism, not specifically for religious reasons, but it's easy for them to take care of social issues, environmental issues, and so on, but they're not that concerned about saving people's souls. And finally, you have the evangelical fundamentalist Christianity that's inclined towards saving people's souls, but they're not that concerned typically about saving the earth, because Jesus is going to come and destroy this world anyway, so might as well use it up. See? So I'm wondering how you address that when you're dealing with your students. How would we go to Scripture to tell us to take care of our creation rather than just have dominion over it and use it up?
We would probably search for balance. Because very often when there is a value neglected in life, we may expect that it's going to use your own words, come after us, come back with vengeance. And that's why we have radical statements around us and movements around us to say, hey, something of immense importance has been neglected in pursuit of profit or what may be termed as more abundant life. We may have sacrificed God's very creation, forgot that we have only one planet to Earth, that God created us in His image to take care of the planet Earth, because no other beings like animals or fish or birds are supposed to do that. But we as human beings, we have that responsibility that should never be neglected.
Uh-huh. And that's a mandate which comes out of the creation story.
Correct, mm-hmm. From the very beginning.
This earth is yours to have mm-hmm. dominion over it, mm-hmm. but dominion not in a nasty sense, but in a helpful sense.
Is steward a good kind of, to be stewards of the earth that we have been given?
You know, that's a word which I think is wonderful, but it's almost been ruined mm-hmm. because it's so closely tied with money. You know, when a church announces a new stewardship program, and
people tend to think just
money.
Finances, mm-hmm. yeah, just and money. Certainly this would be much yeah. more than just
managers.
Managers? Oh, that sounds awfully.
Yeah.
caretakers? That sounds perhaps a bit too passive.
Yeah.
Guardians is too hostile.
I like guardians.
You like guardians.
I like guardians.
You like guardians.
That comes straight from Genesis also.
Yeah.
To guard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to Genesis 2, there is just a fascinating word there where God says that He's placed human beings on the earth to take care of it. almost all translations say that they are to till the earth. Mm-hmm. But the word, the Hebrew word there, is the word to serve. That they have been placed on the earth to serve the earth and to take care of it. I like that as a reminder. Mm-hmm. There's not something to destroy, but it's your responsibility to serve the earth and take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another part of the Old Testament that is important in this connection. And Paul, I know your father worked on this a bit. I don't know whether you have picked up any of his concerns, but he did his doctoral study on the Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us anything that you've picked up by osmosis from your father or from his concerns about saving the earth, taking care of it?
All right, Dad, I'll do my best here. He's listening. The Old Testament concept of Jubilee was part of a sabbatical system based on you have the weekly Sabbath, you have a yearly Sabbath, and then you have a year of Jubilee, which is a year of rest. And it was a year of rest. There were other things that happened as well, but a year of rest for the land, that the land was to receive rest, and a year of kind of restoration. We might use terms like, you know, crop rotation, or we'd use those kinds of that sort of terminology. But and in connection with the land resting, it was also a year of canceling debts, a year of freedom for slaves, people that had been enslaved. And there's a connection between all of these within Israelite society. But it certainly had an environmental kind of of value as well. That people, land, is able to be renewed and refreshed and restored during this year of Jubilee.
It's marvelous because it shows how broad the Sabbath principles is, that encompasses the whole life and society, and it's just amazing.
In fact, I remember reading a British author, I've forgotten his name, but he was reading the book of Deuteronomy. He says it becomes clear that the Sabbath is the first worker protection law. And I suppose it comes out of Deuteronomy 5,
right,
where it's a reminder of the fact you were slaves, and so you better take care of your slaves and make sure that they have enough time. So. Now, in that sense, this is a difficult thing to bring up because you have this wonderful law, idealistic law, but I think I remember your dad saying there's no evidence that it ever really worked.
Yeah, or that it was ever fully implemented or tried, maybe. That I think portions of it, but in terms of kind of across the board, the entire nation fully observing the Jubilee guidelines that God set out for them, I don't know that they ever did that.
Although Christ did, in the beginning of his ministry, emphasize.
He quotes from Isaiah and proclaims the year of the Lord's favor, which was a reference to the year of Jubilee. So in the ministry of Christ, I think we see again the Jubilee principles, the principles of restoration and rest are evident in his ministry.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing that I've discovered, and I don't know if it's a particularly happy discovery, but my parents never really overcame the effects of the Great Depression. They saved everything. And it was really quite an amazing experience when, after my folks, both of them died in an accident together, we had to go in and clean out the house. They literally had saved everything. And so it becomes very difficult for me to get rid of things. It's much easier for me to write a check than to actually give something away that I still have usefulness, because my feeling is that if once I get it, it should last until the Lord comes. So, but it's very interesting to see how that worked. So now when I go to Scripture, because I really would like to change that, I want to be more generous. I don't want to just hang on to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I noticed when I was reading recently the story of the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus commands that the leftovers be brought up, that nothing be wasted.
So, there's this fine line between saving and hoarding, I suppose. I think we ought to have our goods available to others. And I think the same thing applies to the environment as well. I'm uncomfortable, I guess, with the environmental movement, because it seems to me that it's rather selective in the way it encourages us to, you know, that there's some appropriate behaviors that are smiled upon as being green or earth friendly, whereas there are other things that I think are extremely destructive, that are sort of ignored in the environmental movement. But our lesson talks about creation care, and I do like that way of describing it. That would include caring for not just trees and wetlands and coastlines, but that would include caring for other people as well. Yeah. Who are a part of creation.
I worry that at the cost of people, you take care of the animals, because human beings are to take care of the animals, and I don't think we ought to simply abuse them. But I too share that concern that sometimes in the interest for the environment, we're not listening to the needs of real people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there's one other passage in the Old Testament that I think is important here. And it has to do with the rationale for being vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
That one, as I think it was, who was it? George Bernard Shaw, who was a famous vegetarian. He says, "Animals are my friends, and I don't eat my friends." But in Isaiah 11, you have this wonderful passage where the wolf shall live with a lamb, the leopard shall lie down with a kid, calf and the lion and a fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And that section finishes, "And no one shall hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." So that is certainly a motivation. We ought to make this world as much like the next one as we possibly can, but recognizing for everything that we do here, it still will fall short of the mark. Now, let me press that one question. We have just a few moments here left. How do we balance the need for creation care and the needs of specific people?
At times, it's very divisive, and there are a number of situations are complex, and a lot of wisdom is needed.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we can come up with a very general formula that will work everywhere, but it's constantly in the news.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as easy, as you said, a formula. But to make this an object of prayer, ask God to guide us in every situation, and to think not just for the in the short term, but even the long term. What kinds of consequences would come from this long term?
And I think that we have to recognize that we don't know when the Lord's going to come.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's an issue that we will need to continue to address. Next week, our topic will be the Bible and history. My conversation partners will again be Stratko Stefanovic and Paul Dibdahl. My thanks to both of you, and my thanks to John Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm all.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.